Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
We're going to go ahead and get started with class tonight. I want to go ahead and get right into it because we have a lot to cover tonight. If you were with us last week or last time we were together, we got to week two of The Men We Need, which is based off of the book, The Men We Need. And I've really enjoyed this study so far, but I did go ahead and tell you from the very beginning that what we're covering tonight and what we covered last week is heavy. We're going to cover topics like how our brain works. We're going to cover topics like social media, pornography. And so it's going to get heavy. A lot of things we're going to cover, so I want to say that from the beginning. Now, with that, one of the things that I mentioned from the very beginning of class last week was this, which is kind of the theme for this chapter, which is forsaking the fake but relishing the real. Or as the book puts it, don't forsake the real and start relishing the fake, which is those things in front of us, whether that be alcohol, maybe it's what we see on a screen, maybe it's social media, whatever it might be. Don't make that trade, the things that are fake for the things in life that are real. And so as we posed that topic to you, we mentioned this question. I said, have you ever had a moment in life where you thought something would deliver? Like you thought it would be awesome, it would be great, but it only turned out to really disappoint you. I gave the silly illustrations of when my boys wanted two Lakers jerseys for their birthday, and I went and saw how much Lakers jerseys were. And so I went to DHgate, which is a Chinese website, and bought them, two of them, for under 20 bucks. The problem was when they arrived, they turned out to be belly shirts. And when I washed them, the yellow and the purple turned to mix together and made one color. So, you know, that's what I get, right? I also gave the example of when Cruz wanted to dress like a ninja for Halloween. And he had the whole thing picked out. And I said, no, we don't have to do that. Again, trying to be cheap, I'll make something. He shows up and he wouldn't even go in the room because his best friend actually had the outfit he wanted. And so he was very embarrassed, right? I made a trade for the real thing, right? And it didn't land. Well, we got kind of heavy with this from the beginning when the book gave this illustration. He talked about how, you know, we do this with several things. Number one, we see it back in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve made that trade. And if you remember, Satan said, hey, if you have this, it will make you like this, right? If you have this fruit, it will make you like God. And we know that that's kind of the trade that Satan makes with us now, right? Oh, if you get this, then that will happen. And I had a really good discussion last week with somebody that made the point of, especially with pornography, he said Satan loves to convince our minds that, hey, you deserve this. Or maybe he said, even with alcohol, it's been a rough week. Is that kind of pattern of thinking a lot of times that gets us in a mess? We think, all right, maybe I deserve it. But then we do whatever it is, and then we realize, well, that didn't deliver. And so that's what happened to Adam and Eve. The Bible said they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator. And then from then, we see that Scripture is talking about God's rescue plan. So this passage kind of sums it all up. Food gained by fraud tastes sweet, but one ends up with a mouth full of gravel. And it's the idea that what might look like it's a good thing, an appetizing thing, it actually doesn't deliver. And so again, that really heavy illustration that was given in the book was what Forbes did a study on, which was kind of interesting because it was 2022, so still pretty recent, about sex robots. And by the way, I had a guy a few weeks ago say, hey, so tell me what you're going to talk about tonight. How are you going to start class? I heard the topic. I said, sex robots. He goes, I was not thinking you were going to say that. But in the book, what it talks about is that there was a 51% increase in the purchase of sex robots from 2021 to 2022. And one of the things that he mentioned is, of course, that part of that purchasing was because of the sex. So they thought. But the other part, what they found out was that part of the reason why so many people are purchasing them is that what the sex robots are doing, they are having conversations with them, but just telling them basically what they want to hear. Giving the men what they want to hear, not to be challenged, not to be confounded, not to be kind of wondering, maybe I do need to grow in that, just to kind of tell them what they want. And they said it wasn't just the romantic thing that they were after, it was also the connection that they were after. But in that study, one of the things that they found out is that the men that started buying them, that almost every single one of them usually had anxiety, depression, many of them had suicidal thoughts or committed suicide. And one of the things that he said that a lot of them too, if they purchased one and they were telling them what they wanted to hear, and that kind of got old, so they would buy another one, and then they would buy another one, and they would buy another thing. And so it was the idea that it in their minds thought it would deliver something that it just never did. And not just that, but it actually sunk them into a very deep hole. And so this is the thing the book talked about, is the real female mind adds to us, challenges us, compliments us, confounds us, confronts us, and makes us grow. I even asked you guys if maybe before marriage, for those of you that are married, did you think you were a patient person before marriage? Probably so. You get married, turns out you're not as patient as you thought you were, right? But that's good. That's the beauty of what Ephesians talks about. When I talk with couples about marriage, one of the main things I start with is the whole point of marriage is to better understand Christ and His church. That's the point. And what we know about Christ and how He dealt with the church was about that growth, challenging us, wanting us to not settle for status quo. And so what we did is we looked at these two passages. And in specifically Proverbs 5, it talks about being enticed by a woman. But it's not just about being enticed by a woman. But what he's also telling us when he starts with, listen, you got to listen to what I'm saying and you got to heed what I'm saying. He said, if you don't take how enticement works seriously, he said, it's going to create paths. And that word paths in the Hebrew, it would be like for us tire tracks. The way they understood it then was like the wagon wheel tracks. That if you keep going this same way, what's it going to do? It's going to start creating a path. And once you walk down it one time, you're going to find it a little easier. And that's what Psalm 1 says too. And then a little easier and a little easier. And before you know it, what's there? It's these lines in the sand, these marks in the road that you have now created. And so we're going to get to tonight at the very end how we can rethink the way we think. And to try to start bringing some good level ground to those places where we've put some tracks in. And so we said that the danger of this is that when we go for the fake, whether that's social media, whether it's pornography, whether it's alcohol, the difficult thing is we lose our appetite for what's real. It's kind of like even with junk food. That's the problem with junk food and a lot of food that we have is that the food you eat, that it actually kind of tricks your brain. And so if you keep eating the junk food, the bad things, you keep going after those things, but then it kind of makes you then also leave the real things. But the reality is, much bigger deal when it comes spiritually speaking. We even looked at some of the articles and I touched on a few of the ones that people, especially men that regularly look at pornography, one of the things that they also struggle with is erectile dysfunction. Their performance in the bedroom goes down. Their anxiety starts to increase. Their depression starts to increase. Their attention spans are lower and the list can go on. And so what happens is because you're settling for the fake, you're starting to lose your appetite for what's real over and over again. And again, you find yourself in a place you didn't think you'd be. So where do we see this? Well, one of the ways we talked about it was in social media. And I'm going to try to fly through this because we're reviewing from last week. We talked about the good things of social media, but we also talked about the bad. And I said, I know this part is specifically focusing on marriage based on their studies, but I also want us to apply it to whatever area it is of life. Because even if you're married or not, it can distract you from being you. That's one of the things that we talked about. Number two, how it creates jealousy and can lead to unfaithfulness. I shared with you an interesting article I came across from a Christian divorce attorney, and we jokingly talked about it. We didn't know that was, sounds like an oxymoron, but he is a Christian divorce attorney, and he asked, all right, so tell me, what is it that led to your divorce? And he said, right now, this is the progression I hear the most. Well, they spent too much time on Facebook. I got suspicious. It started just as an emotional affair. They had an affair. And we talked a little bit about that progression, what led from one thing to another thing and another thing. And again, this is not saying that social media is bad. This is saying that the impact of what we give it keys to can have a huge impact on us. The other thing is increased emotional distance due to constant online distraction. Someone sent me an article this past week of couples that don't put their phones by the bed, but put them in another spot to where they can still get up in the morning. He said two things happened that we found in our studies. Their sex lives as couples are way better, but also their productivity is way better, because what happens is you get up and you got to go to your phone, so you can't go back to sleep. But also, because you put it there the night before, what you're already thinking is, I put it there for what? A reason, right? And so he mentioned several of the reasons why that was helpful. I thought that was a good article, and thank you for sending that. The other one we talked about is that when you get on your phone, the average time to get back on task to what you were doing or who you were talking to or whatever it is, 23 minutes. It's kind of like once you look at one thing, then before you know it, you're watching like three videos of cats surfing. And so you're like, how did I get here? You know, it's like 23 minutes later, you got sucked in. The other thing is comparison. A comparison with idealized relationships. It's kind of the idea when you look on social media and you might have been perfectly content with your life. But then when you see where they're at and you start to compare their highlights to your behind the scenes, all of a sudden you don't feel so good about whatever it is that you're enjoying, whoever you're with. And one of the quickest ways to kill contentment is through comparison and comparing their highlight reels to you. But then also we neglect the face-to-face. And this is from a sermon I did a few weeks ago when we talked about the importance of the table and face-to-face conversations. We talked about that, you know, in 2019, 25% of Americans say they have no one to talk to. Middle age are the loneliest in the United States. And I remember thinking, man, that's awful for them. And I was like, oh, that's me. Then 1 in 3 people said they have nobody to share their troubles or triumphs with. The Village Effect talks about how face-to-face interaction makes us healthier, happier, and smarter. This one was the one that stuck out to me. This is from 2013. And I want Harvard to do an updated, because imagine what it is now. Showed that kids who ate around a table regularly with their parents were 72% less likely to experience depression, struggle with self-esteem, suicidal thoughts, developing eating disorders, or use illegal drugs than those who did not. Now, I want to show you this. Peter Wingard sent me this after class last week. This is Oxford Dictionary's 2024 Word of the Year. See what it is? Brain rot. In case you can't read that, brain rot is excessive screen time, mindless scrolling, digital addiction is reshaping your brain. And this says, here's what you need to know. That brain rot describes the mental fog, shortened attention span, and cognitive decline linked to over-consuming low-quality online content. One of the things that if you were to follow that link, it would also lead you to a really interesting study on the link to social media and our phones and dementia, and the increase of dementia and so to me, when you have a dad that has dementia and you have a granddad that had dementia, I'm like, okay. You know, that was very personal to me. Usage of the term increased 230% from 2023 to 2024, okay? Again, poor memory, poor execution function, decision making. So what's happening to our brain? It says different behaviors are zombie scrolling, mindlessly scrolling, doom scrolling, where you're negatively thinking about the news, gaming overload. We talked about this. We didn't have much time to get into it, but I shared with y'all that when I look at the couples that I've done premarital counseling with and counseling, hands down, the top divider in problems in marriage, no question, is alcohol. And I told y'all that the three of the four that are struggling with alcohol, three of the four got a divorce, and someone asked me after class, well, what happened to the other couple? Well, I'll tell you what's happened to the other couple. By title, they're married, but they're living in a separate house. Okay, so that's my statistics. So number one, that's the highest. But then the other two, one of the things I told you was, yes, social media, but to me, video games. We might be shocked at that, but the amount of times I've had couples struggling because he or she is addicted to video games. All right. The human brain wasn't designed, though, for endless digital stimulation. It says studies show that the excessive screen time leads to gray matter shrinkage in areas responsible for decision making and impulsive control. Social media use floods the brain with dopamine and the prefrontal cortex. And anyway, you can keep reading. But if you want the slides, I can send them to you. But that's kind of the big idea. All right. Here's a new material for tonight. Here's the other way I think we relish the fake and forsake the real, according to the book, but also I would agree, just in general, is through pornography. Here's an interesting thing about how quick this happened, okay? In 1839, the photograph was invented. 11 years later, the word pornographer made its way into the dictionary. 11 years later. While that might be interesting to some of you, I put some stats together, and I've actually taught on this when I had college students, when I was in campus ministry, and I'll tell you the most humbling thing is when you come back to get prepared to get the more up-to-date research, when you see how it's escalating, like at a faster rate than I can even like copy and paste in here to give you the stats. It's unbelievable, okay? So right now, so when I first started this, this is my fourth year in campus ministry. I put together, we'd had a guy's class. The pornography industry was a $57 billion industry. You know what it is now? $287 billion industry. It exceeds the industry of second just to the NFL, but has the combined revenue more of the NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball. Okay? Also has more than the revenue of ABC, NBC, and CBS. Maybe people don't like fake news. I'm just kidding. We're not getting that. So there's all these different things that I could share that we don't have time to share. But here's what I... this was Barna in 2024. Americans in general. This is not Christians. This is just Americans. 61% of American men and 44% of American women view pornography daily. All right? And if you know anything about stats, here's also a telling thing of stats. Stats are always a little skewed with questions like this because of why people don't maybe want to admit. So this is on the lower end, okay? All right. So I'm about to show you some statistics when it comes to Christians and pornography. And I don't want you to answer this question out loud. And I wasn't going to mention this question until somebody last week reached out to me and they shared with me where they were first exposed to pornography, and they said, I think it would be helpful for people to know. And I said, well, it's interesting you said that because that's similar to where I was first exposed to pornography. So I'm giving you this example not to scare you. To help us understand the seriousness, yes, but also to understand how proactive we have to be with ourselves, but also how proactive we have to be, especially if we have kids, okay? The place I was first exposed to pornography was on a youth group trip. I was 12, okay? A church retreat when I was 12 years old, all right? We had an overnight trip, and we were in a hotel, and one of the guys that was one of the responsible teenagers, and he actually was, in my mind, was in our room, turned it on, and we were watching it, and I just remember sitting there like, I'm not saying anything because this is like my first youth trip. But at the same time, I knew it wasn't right. So like, I didn't know what to do with myself. Now, I told y'all, I'm not telling you that to say, well, you don't need to send your kids on youth. That's not what I'm telling you that for. Here's why I am telling you that, okay? If you have not attended Brandon's class called The Talk that he's had before, one of the things he talks about is part of the struggle, and I'll just tell you, I agree with it too, from talking with a lot of young men that are experiencing this struggle, it was not talked about when they were younger, at all. Was not talked about in the church, and was not talked about at all from their dads, okay? And Brandon in that class talks about how you have to be very proactive as a parent to start having that conversation, or they're gonna get it from somewhere. And you're like, well, no, I'm monitor things pretty well. Give you an example. When I went to Brandon's class, I said, when should I start the conversation? He's like, well, I don't think it's bad to start, you know, introing it at 10. And we're going to get to this later. I've already told him, and one time he's already told me, is a few months ago, that someone said something to him about this, and he came to me. And I was so glad. And so that's why I'm saying start it earlier. And if it weren't for Brandon's class, I would not have started early with those kind of conversations. So here's my old stat. 2018, 53% of Christian men admitted to viewing pornography that week. an online newsletter. This was Today's Christian Woman magazine. 34% of their female readers admitted to intentionally accessing internet pornography. All right. This is from 2023. We're about to read part of the study. The study also pointed out that while men use porn more than women, both genders still struggle with it. Around 75% of Christian men and 40% of Christian women reported consuming porn on some level. That's 2023. So here's a graph, and I thought this was a good description from Barna Research. They said, and while practicing faith does correlate with less porn use, we see that over half of practicing Christians, this is just in their research, 54%, report viewing pornography. Okay, report doing this. And here's the interesting thing. This study was done amongst ministers, church leaders, and regular churchgoers. Like, that was the minimum. Like, you had to be active in a church or serving in a church. Okay? So again, keeping that in mind with your statistics. Here was the other thing that I thought was interesting. Barna said that less than 10% of churches in America discuss pornography and its impact on Christian homes. Less than 10%. Why should we have a class about this? Why should we discuss it? You go, well, Andrew, the stats. Yes, but I want to give us a few more reasons why I think we should. Here's two reasons. If y'all could read these texts for me.
The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light.
All right. Do y'all think that's true? I know, Jesus said it. Yeah. But I'm saying, do you, from your own experience, think that's true? What about this one? You know what's interesting about this one? This is in the context of thy word is a what? Lamp unto my feet and light unto my path. And what he's really trying to get at with this one is I have something that you can look at that will be worth something, that will provide you something. But if you keep looking at worthless things, it's going to impact, if you keep reading, not just what you do in that moment, but long term down the road. Here's another reason why I think we need to talk about it. So, I don't remember if I've ever used this illustration here before or not, but one of my shepherds at Robertsdale used to be in the FBI. He gave the best lesson I have ever heard on temptation ever. It was fantastic. But it was also very eye-opening because his whole point, he used the narrative of Joseph. Okay, if you go back, you remember Joseph. And when Potiphar's wife tried to say, hey, lay down with me, y'all remember what he said? He's like, we just got a few minutes, right? Or he said, well, let's just hold hands and pray about it, right? No, he got out of there, right? He got out of there, but also it wasn't the fact that he just ran. If you notice something in his words, he said this. How could I do what? This great wickedness. So number one, he defined it for what it was. He didn't say it was a fling. He didn't say it was just a fun time. He defined it for what it is. He saw it. How do you get to a place in your mind and in your heart where you see something not just as I don't want to get caught, but see it as great wickedness. But also, here was the next thing. Do you remember he said, I have a lot of responsibility. He said, I'm in charge of this and I'm in charge of that. It's the idea, hey, people are looking up to me. People need me. That's the other part of this, okay? And so he used that narrative to talk about his experience with being on this show, How to Catch a Predator. So if you look at, and you wouldn't know who to look for, but I could show you. If you go to YouTube and watch some of these, I don't know if y'all have ever seen this show, and I'll explain a little bit of the show to you in a second. Jeff was one of the guys that was in the computer room waiting for that guy, whoever it would be. How to Catch a Predator basically tries to find guys that are targeting or going after or are trying to reach out to somebody under the age of 18, okay? And so he worked for the FBI for years for this, retired. They wanted him to help with this show, okay? So that's what Jeff did. And so what he talked about, he said, you know, after my job was to interrogate the guys that we ended up, that's the part you don't see on TV. He said, that was my job, was to interrogate them, to act, you know, learn about them. Here was the thing that was the two things that stood out the most to me. He said, number one was the amount of guys that were, he said, you would think it was like, he said, you know, like when you think creepy guys, you would think like they were people that you wouldn't normally. He said these were like guys that had everyday jobs. They were leaders of their divisions. They were school teachers. He said there was a minister. He said there was one guy that was like running a youth baseball league. He said, I mean, these are like a lot of your different leaders in the community. He said these weren't guys that had been previously arrested before and all these kind of things. But he said, here's what was the most interesting. I said, what do you think got you to do what you're doing today? And this is what I thought was the most interesting in how he connected with Joseph, is he talked about that every single one of them had the same exact root. It started with lust, and then it started with pornography. And then that pornography didn't feed that appetite. And so then it led to a different type of pornography and then another type of pornography, and on it goes. Before each one did not satisfy until they were now in their minds making this move. All right. Do you remember what we talked about in the very beginning? About how when we make that exchange, the fake for the real, we think it's going to provide one thing, but it provides a whole nother thing. And so, by the way, I keep thinking that lesson needs to be preached to everybody. Like it's so good. But to hear that from his perspective, that basically these guys didn't get here overnight, is what he's saying. It was little by little by little. Remember back to Proverbs 5? Those wheels, those tracks. He said, be careful where you what? Walk. Because if you walk with in the wrong places, then you'll what? Stand, and then if you're not careful where you stand, then you've what? You're sitting, which in the Hebrew meant moved in, basically. You're hanging out in it. You're living in it. You notice that progression. That's another reason I think we need to talk about it. Another one is because we kind of mentioned earlier is we don't. And I do think there is a time and a place, by the way. I think this is a time right now and a place. I think also offering, and I'm going to get to this in just a second, offering opportunities for people to reach out and to talk about it. The second thing is this, that openness allows us, of course, to confront the issue. You know, through Scripture, people usually came to an understanding that they needed a change of behavior, either when, okay, Acts 2, Peter was preaching, or Acts 1 and 2, and because of his lesson, his preaching, they're like, I got to do something. But then there was other times where Jesus just flat out called him out, like in Luke 18, right? Hey, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're doing. And so sometimes it's through self-admission. Sometimes it's through challenge. But whatever it looks like, we got to talk about it. It's kind of like with Alcoholics Anonymous. The first step is what? Admitting, right? You got to admit that there's a problem. Also, the one, what was it? Proverbs 28:13, whoever conceals his sins will not prosper. David Polison, he's a counselor that I really like his stuff. He says things that grow, things that stay in a secret garden, they always grow mutant. Kind of similar, Proverbs 28:13. We conceal our sins, they will not prosper. Here's the other one. Openness allows other Christians to carry out their responsibility. And I told you guys before, I know I mentioned this to you, I had a college student that came forward on a Wednesday night and he said, hey, I'm having some struggles. And so we prayed for him and I said, hey, anything you need to talk about? He's yeah, well, I feel good. It feels good to get that off my chest. Just struggles, okay? Now, nothing wrong with just saying struggles. So people after worship did what a lot of people do. They come up and hug the guy and tell him they're praying for him, then they leave. Okay. He comes to me about two or three weeks later. He's like, Andrew, I'm still struggling. I was like, well, what's going on? He said, well, it's been with pornography and it's not really gotten better. Like, I don't know what to do. And I've been praying a lot, but I'm still struggling with it. And when I said this again, I should have given a little bit of maybe a caveat, but maybe not. I said, well, I think what it was when you came forward and just said you had a struggle, I even told you if you need to talk to me to come talk to me, but I didn't know what to really help you with. I've just been praying for a struggle. Well, if I'd have known this, we could have talked about it. I said, I guess if you were more specific, okay? That's where the conversation left off, okay? Next Wednesday night rolls around. He comes forward And he says in front of the whole congregation, I'm struggling right now with pornography. You know what happened after that worship service? Instead of people hugging the guy and walking and leaving, he had two men from church taking him out to breakfast. Well, one took him out to breakfast, one had him in his home. They were having conversations because he had struggled with the exact same thing. Now, I'm not saying that that's the avenue for you and every single time, but what does that tell you? I think about Galatians 6, right? The way we can help bear each other's burdens and to fulfill the law of Christ is we can't do it if we don't know what each other's struggling with. And so, now, interesting thing too, that he's somebody that actually talks about this a lot now, and he's a youth minister somewhere, and it's kind of interesting how that openness ended up blessing him. Here's another reason. Porn is killing sex. That's one of the major reasons. One of the things I shared with you guys last week, they touch on it in the book, is that people that have a porn addiction are oftentimes they struggle with abuse, emotional, verbal, physical abuse. But the other thing that they struggle with a lot of times, more often than not, and this was, so I had a doctor that shared this with me, I thought was really interesting, that goes to church with us. He said that we are seeing erectile dysfunction in adolescents and in teenagers now because of pornography. Teens, okay? So this is from the book. Gary Wilson wrote several good books. One of the ones that he wrote is, Jason uses it a lot in his media class on Digital Babylon, whatever he calls that. Sorry, Jason, you're not here, but I can't think of what it's called. Analog Faith in Digital Babylon. And the book is called Your Brain on Porn. And he uses a lot of those studies. And Jason had some very interesting statistics of average age of first-time exposure. By the way, he's been, whenever he goes to a church, he asks just the people there, what was, you know, the first time you were exposed to pornography? Average age today, Jason, going to churches, what do you think it is? 10. Average. Again, y'all remember that article I also shared with y'all last week called This Is Who's Dating Your Daughter? Again, these are things that we have to always think about. But also keep in mind, it's not just because it's your that person's someone's son. That's someone's daughter. Important things to think about. But anyway, Gary Wilson, this is what he said in his other, this is his TED Talk called The Great Porn Experiment. He says this, arousal addiction symptoms are easily mistaken for such things as ADHD, social anxiety, depression, concentration problems, performance, anxiety, OCD, and a host of others. Basically, what he's saying is that there's a lot of teens that their parents think they have ADHD, that they have their anxiety, depression, which actually what they found out is no, they're struggling with pornography. Now, healthcare providers often assume that these conditions are primary, perhaps the cause of addiction, but never really the result of an addiction. As a consequence, they often medicate these guys without inquiring about whether they have an internet addiction. So guys never realize they can overcome these symptoms simply by changing their behavior. And then the book says, think about that. Depression, ADHD, concentration problems, all possibly, not always of course, but perhaps often rooted in addiction to arousal. And I want to get y'all's thoughts on some of these. Why? I'm trying to get through the material. The next one. Openness opens the door for God's forgiveness and reconciliation. God's forgiveness is waiting around the corner. But a lot of times I think what happens is because we don't mention it a lot, I think people are trying to fix it on their own. And so they're in this constant struggle. But also at the same time, if you have a pattern, and this is one of the things that that the Barna study showed, is if you have a consistent pattern of parents not talking to their kids about it, what's happening is you're now having a generation of kids that are trying to fix themselves. Okay? Now, that's a problem for two reasons. Number one, yes, we have the body of Christ, but also Christ. Like, we can't fix us. We can't. Right? It's impossible. In fact, one of the things that Lorianne and I were reading today, because she's helping with the ladies' class, because they're talking about the words of life, and we were reading James 3. You know, in James 3, you read through that, and man, if you listen to the words of that, it's kind of like, man, I guess I can't do anything with my words. It says that no human being can tame the tongue, and you read that, and you're like, man, well, I guess there's no sense in trying, but what is he saying? No what? No human being. No human being can tame the tongue. So what is he saying? It takes who? Basically, yes. Basically, at this point, we're trying to operate from self-control. Self-control will last a short amount of time. There's a big difference in being self-controlled and spirit-led. Big difference. And self-control is willpower. Spirit-led is God's power. That's what he's saying, that no human being can tame the tongue, right? It takes someone outside of us to help us, right? So here's the other one. Openness can create an atmosphere of openness. Now, here's what I mean by this one. This was, I think, year two or three when I was at Faulkner. I forget what we were covering, a book on the different disciples, and we talked about Thomas and doubting. And just kind of on a whim in class, I said this. I said, hey, if any of you are struggling with doubts and you're like your belief about God, like, let me know. I had three students come up to me and say, hey, can we talk? Like, I'm seriously doubting God. I'm like, wow, like you are? Like, you're one of my, like, I would have never known, okay? Then that got me thinking. I was like, you know, I need to start doing that with a lot of things. And so with each new topic, so when this one came around, I said, hey, if you need to talk about this, let me know. I'd love to connect you with somebody. Oh, y'all, you thought the doubts of God was a big, I mean, it was like we were having to schedule out, you know, all these different times because it was such a big deal. Again, openness creates an atmosphere of openness, all right? All right, so what things should you discuss? And here's what I mean, that if you find out your child is, and again, but I think this can also help you if you don't have a kid but you're trying to figure out how did you get here, I think it is important to ask these questions. You could ask your kids these questions. What has been your involvement in pornography? Hey, how did you get involved? Again, what do you notice about these questions? We think about it. How long have you been involved? Do you want to stop? Have you tried to stop? Who showed it to you? What's the longest you've been successful at not viewing pornography? How and where did you? Was it the internet? Was it on you know on the computer, on someone's phone? Is it how is it affecting your life? How is it affecting our relationship? If you notice something about those questions, it's just asking them the questions, because I had one of those young men that met with me when his mom called me and she said, hey, I just found out that so-and-so is struggling with pornography and he won't talk to me. And I was like, okay, well, tell me what happened. And she said, well, I called him because he was where our computer was. I could see what he was doing and he tried to erase it and get rid of it, but I could see it. And I said, well, how did that go? She goes, well, I got onto him. I said, no son of mine would ever do something like that. I said, well, that's where you lost him. Because the problem was, guess what he wasn't wanting to do? Talk to her. Two problems there. Number one, how she responded, right? All right, but the second problem, that closed lines of communication, but here's my second problem. I said, have y'all talked about this before? Well, no, his dad didn't really want to talk about it. I was like, okay. So you see the both ends of the spectrum here? Again, I'm not blaming, I'm not saying the kid's free of responsibility here, but I am saying you see the two sides of the coin here, that there has to be some kind of conversation, all right? If, another thing you can ask, what did you do to stop using pornography if you have before? Like, have you had some successes? Whatever that might be. Here's the other thing that I want us to think about that I never considered. I found this a few weeks ago. I thought it was really good. What things you should understand before discussing it. Here's an example. Because not every situation is the same. Now, this is a little older, but here's what it says. John had internet growing up. He stumbled upon pornography once or twice in sixth grade. His dad found out, talked to him about it. John stopped looking at pornography. John did not know about sex, sexual terms, or what was appropriate or inappropriate. In seventh grade, one of the kids at school talked about masturbation. John did not know any better. Went home, masturbated for the next 2 years. He would look at lingerie and fitness magazines. Before he realized that masturbation was not appropriate, he was addicted to it, could not stop. That then led to pornography use, which was a struggle for him for the next 3 years. Finally, in 12th grade, he talked to a church leader for the second time and was able to stop using pornography. For the past 6 years, he has not had any problems with pornography. Mike went to Europe for a year while he was in middle school. In health class one day, the teacher, this is another example, mentioned some sexual terms he was unfamiliar with. Also, why in the world is Mike going to Europe in middle school? That's the question I had. Next one. That day, he went home, searched for terms online, then unintentionally found pornographic images. That was the beginning of his involvement that lasted until his freshman year in college. So, the purpose of these stories is to illustrate that sometimes it's unintentional, intentional, but it still does not change some of the factors of what? We got to talk about it. And so I wish we had more time, man, to get into some of this. So part of it, number one, changing the way you think. Gary Wilson said this, what kind of, it talks about ED, but this also has a lot to do with other things. What do guys who successfully recover from porn-induced ED suggest? Suggestion number one is to eliminate porn, porn substitutes, and recalling the porn you watched. Or to put another way, eliminate all artificial sexual stimulation. By artificial, I mean pixels, audio, and literature. No porn substitutes, such as surfing pictures on Facebook, Snapchat, dating apps, cruising Craigslist, underwear ads, YouTube videos, erotic literature, etc. If it's not real life, there we go again, just say no. Content isn't as much the issue as whether you are mimicking the behaviors that are wired into your brain to need to novel screen-based stimulation. The second suggestion is to rewire your sexual arousal to real people. While this helps everyone recover, it may be a key component for young men with little or no sexual experience. Basically, in his article, one of the things that Barna used to talk about this is if you have a spouse, using that to only think about, look at her in that light. This does not mean that you need to have sex to rewire. In fact, slowly getting to know someone is probably the best path. Hanging out, touching, and making out help connect sexual arousal and affection to a real person and be essential to recovery. I know that doesn't have a lot to do with everything, but there is some stuff in there that I think things that we think that are not big deals, he's saying are really, really big deals. The other one, it's a connection intimacy. Intimacy, as Donnie Hilliard said, means I'm into you, I see. I like that definition. It's not just about sexuality. It's about being into that other person. There's a book that I use in premarital counseling. It's called Great Sex Starts in the Kitchen. Funny title, but really what it means is this. The way you treat someone in one part of the house impacts the other part of the house. If you treat her like trash in the kitchen, then you go to the bedroom, be like, hey, honey, and you put your foot up, it's like, move your foot. You know, like there's a connection there, whether you want there to be or not. Wanted to talk more about that. The third one, talk about it. Take graceful action. The final one was be filled. We were going to look at Galatians 5. The idea was if you go to somebody and say, you need to stop with pornography, they're like, well, I want to. But the problem is it's not just stopping and removing something. We have to learn to put someone in its place. Does that make sense? It's not just about removing something. It's about putting something in its place. Sorry we had to fly through that tonight. There was a lot to cover. I've got to go into the auditorium. If you have some comments, I would love to hear. A lot of what you share, guys, share with me last week helped formulate tonight's class. So thank you guys very, very much.